The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat Podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Cincinnati.com beat writers Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ozarski take you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. It's the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by 50 West Brewing Company, the OG edition. All these BBPs we do now, this is it. This is the one. This is the heavy hitter, the Ridge, Paul Diener Jr. And for one last final time, my partner, Jim Ozarski. Are you emotional over the last BBP? I mean, you're gonna miss holding the mic and sitting in this cold room. I know you are.
I will miss it. I am not emotional, but I will miss it. It is true. So thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate being able to do this one last time.
Well, yeah, we've got to do a prop. I felt the whole time this needed to be your last act.
Yeah,
to literally drop the mic on the Cincinnati Inquirer.
Right.
So this is it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make you do. Although I don't know, I'm a little busy with a couple stories I'm writing for today. So maybe I will. Maybe I'll just throw a last minute notebook on you or something. No.
I didn't even bring my computer.
I know. I was not prepared for this.
No.
No, this is the last and final act, so we'll try to make it a good one. It's a chance because, you know, this time of year, we're still kind of diving through a lot of news that's happening, and there is big news that we're about to get into. But we're not quite to prediction season yet. Usually we wait for the special section and the season to be a little bit closer until we offer that up. But since you are just setting the bridge on fire on the way out, this is your chance.
Yeah.
We will give you a chance later on in the pod to offer your predictions for the season, for the future, anything else you'd like to try to predict so you can say, check the tape, I said it.
Yeah, right?
Right? I think it'd be good. It could be good.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it.
We'll get to all of that. So if you're a prediction person and you're just here for the takes, you can scroll ahead. Otherwise, we're going to talk about the big piece of news that came out of Sunday. If you listen to the BBP, this shouldn't have completely shocked you. We've been talking about the issue that they've been having as a franchise in this area throughout the offseason.
Right.
They have not hid their displeasure. But veteran safety George Iloka was let go on Sunday, and, you know, $5.3 million is saved against the salary cap this season. So that is a part of this,
right?
Without a doubt. But a big part of this is they want more production out of the safety position, and Terrell Austin wants more turnovers. That's what he is. That's why they drafted Jesse Bates. And they've seen enough from Jesse Bates to feel comfortable moving on from George Iloka and putting the rookie into the starting lineup. It's a bold move. It's a risky move. But it's the one they made.
Yeah. It wasn't about a kicker. Go figure.
Yeah, I guess we'll
talk about that. You said if you've listened to the BBP or if you read our tweets or read our stories, I mean, this has been simmering since January, February, really. I mean, you've had Kirk Coleman, you've had Eric Reed, and you draft Jesse Bates. I mean, this is their disdain, and I use that word because, I mean, I haven't heard coaches or people be like, we need safeties, we need more turnovers, whatever. I mean, they were not happy, disdained with their play.
Yeah.
From last year. And then, and so, you know, you don't spend the draft capital or entertain free agents like you do if you are happy. I don't know if I could sit here and say Jesse Bates beat out George Iloka for the starting job based off camp and two preseason games. But what I can say is, and I think Terrell Austin said this on Monday, is Jesse Bates did enough that, like, you don't need the insurance policy.
Yeah.
Because that's, I mean, he was already rotating in, and if they thought that by week three, Jesse's going to have to start and play 75% of the snaps, why wait? So they must have seen enough that they feel that that's where it's going. Even if today, I can't sit here and be like, Jesse Bates has been so awesome.
No, I mean, he's not made a pick in an OTA. I haven't even seen him break up a pass yet. Yeah. Or have a pass breakup. I don't think they doubt that part of his game.
Right.
I think that they know that he's a good center fielder.
Yeah.
They know that he has shown ball skills and how to get to the right place. And he's got that range. The kind of the thing I guess they were concerned about is how will his tackling go? And I think they felt convinced of that through the two games. They wanted to see him in games live to see how that looked or if he looked scared. And, I mean, he made a really nice play on a tackle out in space against Dallas. I remember noting it and thinking, that's a big deal. I guess who knew at that time how big of a deal it maybe actually right. was? That may have been the play where they said, this guy's ready. I mean, it's obviously a body of work thing, but here's the problem I have with this. And I don't, you know, if you feel like you need a better play, one interception last year from your center fielder is not acceptable in a year where you had all kinds of pressure. We talked a lot about those stats where all the top pressure teams are high turnover teams because you see that on the back end. They didn't see that on the back end, and that's about being in the right spot. So I accept them feeling that way.
Right.
Don't sell to me that this isn't about the money.
Yeah.
Because you could have kept the depth and you could have kept George Iloka when Sean Williams inevitably gets hurt.
Yeah.
Or if Jesse Bates doesn't play well because he's a rookie, you have somebody there to fill in and you keep that. You have a veteran depth piece.
Yeah.
But if you look at $5.3 million, you say that's some nice money to save. And, you know, you're talking about trying – you're in negotiations currently with Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap and Lord knows down the road what that's going to look, those contracts are going to look like, or whatever. Darquez Dennard.
Oh, if they get through the week one and they don't extend either of those guys, oh, people are going to lose their minds.
People will lose it, and I you know, I it's understandable. I just, you know, you see that, and that's. Don't sell me it's not about the money. I mean, and that doesn't make them cheap, in my opinion. I don't have a problem with it. People have been saying for years, why don't they cut guys they don't want to save the money?
Right?
And then they cut a guy. Why? You're just cheap. You just save the money.
Right, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of money that they plan on spending on certain guys, all those that I just mentioned.
My issue with the move, again, isn't whether or not I think Jesse Bates III beat out George Iloka or cap savings. I guess my issue with the move, Paul, is who are the safeties? It was a thin room to start camp because it was George and Sean, Jesse Bates and Clayton Fedulum, Brandon Wilson. So you had five like safeties, and then Josh Shaw is kind of like five and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had, you know, undrafted rookie Trayvon Henderson and I don't know who else was back there. I mean, so it's a thin room, thin for sure on experience. So now it's Bates III and Williams. Williams has rarely played 16 games. So now you got Fedulum. I think a good backup safety, special teams maven.
Maven. And he'll get you're okay with him starting a couple day games for you due to injury.
Right. So now it's Brandon Wilson, who's never played any games. And then So everyone moves up a spot. And I guess that's where I'm sort of curious, is your back end, where if you make a mistake, it costs touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I guess that's what I'm most curious about with this team going forward, is while they're cool with that. Like, okay. I mean, it's very un-Marvin-like. It is.
It's very un-Marvin-like. I mean, to start a rookie and to just give in to a, I mean, rookies were playing their butt off last year, and Jeremy Hill's still starting games.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, how good does Joe Mixon have to look, and you're still giving stupid starts to Jeremy Hill at the beginning of first two halves, but now you're trading
John
with George
John Ross is
and
in the imaginary doghouse, yeah.
Right. And you're right. And you know, how draft a starter for years.
Yeah.
I mean, you've made a living off of saying that line.
Yeah.
And yet here they are. Now they're going to have two rookie starters right away, and including Jettison, a perfectly good guy that you invested in. You know, and we've heard this throughout conversations with the organization. I think that they didn't feel like, you know, the contract didn't look good to them when they look at it now. Because at the time...
Yeah, safety market totally cratered.
Remember, yeah, exactly. And remember this. I mean, that was back in that messy 2016 offseason where... Marvin Jones and Mo Sanu, and they had their party. They had all the free agents and Iloka and Nelson, and it was all their players, and it was chaos, right? And Marvin Jones is like, "I'm coming back. Nah, screw it. I don't want to play next to AJ Green anymore."
Yep.
And then they were like, kind of left holding their bag of money that they were going to give to him, and then they said, "Okay, well, George, you take it," and he said, "Yes."
Yeah, he did. There's another guy in that. There's a couple other guys that got paid that offseason. Adam Jones no longer here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another contract that was signed that money don't look too good either.
No. It's out there. And that's fine. You know, but I think that that's something that it'd be one thing if that happens. And, yeah, but then George continues to play at a level and there's comfort between coordinator. Well, a new coordinator comes in.
Yeah, that's
and that changes things.
Yeah,
he looks at everybody and he evaluates who he thinks is not going to fit with him. And I think that was clear from the get-go, that I don't think George was a fit with what Terrell Austin wants.
Yeah.
I think that's part of this, too.
At the end of the day, it's the, you know, like I said, I was going to pound Marvin and these guys with the win now thing. And look, I mean, we knew Billy Price, what that was from jump. Jesse Bates, we were curious. Mm-hmm. So if that's, maybe that's what it is. Maybe Marvin has finally gotten tired of draft a starter. And it's like, okay,
I'm going to show you guys what happens when you play rookies.
Yeah, right.
And you can yell about that. I mentioned Terrell Austin. I want to bring him in, talking a little bit about George and a lot about Jesse Bates real quick. And you can get a little bit of his feel for this entire situation. And we'll come back and address a couple more things before moving on to kind of a bigger picture of the defense. Here is Bengals defensive coordinator Terrell Austin.
A big move was George. Losing George, the obvious assumption is, I guess, going to go with the kid Bates. Can maybe kind of talk about what led to the move, what you guys are thinking?
Well, I think, you know, upstairs, they obviously make decisions that we think are best for the football team. And I'll start this out by saying George is a true professional, really good worker, great guy, great teammate. But we also... And I think in the long-term interest, we really feel really good where we are with our young safeties moving along that way. And so I think that's overall why it was made.
What have you seen specifically from Jesse that you really like and like moving forward?
Well, I think when we watched him coming out, we knew he had really good movement, really good range, got around the ball. Biggest issue I thought was, you know, how is he going to tackle in our league? And he's shown, I think, a willingness to tackle. He's been a really solid tackler, really good angles, getting guys down. And so I think that was the the one question we needed answered.
When you look at George, football IQ, as strong as anybody, like a coach in the field kind of guy, Bates seems to be cut from that cloth. I mean, he's smart as hell, and is he – even though he's a young guy, a lot of trust you have in him and able to call, make the calls and all that?
Absolutely. He's going to grow. He's going to make some mistakes. He's going to, as all young guys do, they're going to have some some questions, and they're going to have some bad plays. It's going to happen. But I think when you look at the when you look at his upside and his ceiling, I really think he's got a chance to be a really good player and help us in terms of turning the ball over, being a guy out there as a field general and getting everything lined up, because I think he is really bright.
He's kind of got a rep as, if you talk to people who've been around him, he's got a rep as kind of being a film junkie guy. Have you found him to be a guy who's a studier or a guy that?
I think what happens, obviously I don't see him studying, but you know guys that study, because when they come out, they're not making a ton of mistakes, or if they make mistakes, they figure out how to fix them the next time. And I think that's one of the things with him. He's been able to fix some mistakes that he's made, and I think that'll be his strength moving forward.
You repped him a lot with Sean and then with George, with the ones. How important was it to see him kind of interact with that first unit at times, both in camp and in some of the games, in the preseason games?
Well, I think it was important because we were evaluating, what was best with those guys and how fast we could bring them along and if he was up to the challenge. We know George and we know Sean are NFL players, NFL safeties, have played a lot of games in this league, and we wanted to see how he would react playing against good guys, being in there with the first group, being able to communicate and earn the trust of his teammates.
And he's a guy that figures into that. Team speed thing. He gives you a boost team speed.
Absolutely. He can run and cover some ground. He's got tremendous ball skills. So he's got
something we really haven't seen in coach yet. Really, his ball skills. I mean, is that? Do you think that's more of a product of? It's not a hell of a lot to show, or do you think there's?
They'll show up. I think eventually what happens is when the opportunities present themselves, they won't be missed. That's what we're looking for. A guy that won't miss them and guys back there that can take advantage of them. And that's all over the defense. We've got to have guys that turn the ball over because we want to give our offense as many opportunities as possible and keep the other team out of the end zone and give our offense as many opportunities as possible.
All right, so there's Terrell Austin talking a little bit about George. Opens it by saying, look, George is a professional. He's a pro. He's a leader. And there's nothing but respect in the building. And from a personal perspective, huge loss for us. I mean, anybody that has listened to this, you've heard George on here before, speaking his mind about things and being generally affable. Super nice. If you've watched BTS, he's a must have every year. He's fun. He's entertaining. He's just a good guy.
He did his scheduled children's hospital visit after they cut him.
Yeah,
and that was part of like the contractual stuff. The team does a lot of those things, and so he easily could have just said deuces and grabbed his stuff and left, but he fulfilled that commitment.
And that's all you really need to know. Yeah. That's all you really need to know. So, I mean, it's from our perspective personally, which means nothing in the big picture. It was sad to see, but you get it. One thing that I saw a lot of on our timeline with questions afterwards, people confused. If you go back and read the story, I kind of walk you through step by step what this offseason looked like and them putting the safeties, and particularly George, on notice over and over and over again. And I think we said this in Instagram Live the other day. It's like, how many times does the organization have to say or do something until you believe them?
Right.
And it was an entire offseason that even though, you don't think that – you don't see that or think that's going to happen, they basically told us it over and over and over again in some capacity. Everyone says, well, they should have traded him, right? it's not really how it works. No. His contract was pretty much made him untradeable.
No one was paying safeties. I mean, there's guys still out there. And no one is getting $6 million. Hmm. I mean, Dre. Freudian slip there. Oops. Guys getting paid. But I mean, no one would trade for. I think if you were to look at, if George would have made his $6 million, he suddenly was probably one of the more higher-paid safeties in the league.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And so you look at that, and no one's going to take that. And B, you're just not going to get much of anything for it. So that trades like that don't...
It's not how it works.
Corey Coleman was a first-round pick a few years ago, and they shipped him for a conditional 7th in 2020. I mean, you look at... try to find me a safety trade comp and tell me how that looks.
Yeah, no.
At this time of year, when everybody's got 90 players that they're evaluating. Now, do I think he will land? Yeah, he'll probably land in Oakland. Yeah, I mean,
he'll have a job soon.
He'll probably be playing next to Reggie Nelson before long.
That'd be something, wouldn't it?
I mean, we've seen it.
Bengals West.
I mean, Paul likes who he's comfortable with. Yeah. Man's out there. Emmanuel Emer is out there.
Leon Hall
is out there. You have George. You have Reggie. It's like they're trying to recreate the 15 Bengals in 2018. But anyway, so that kind of ties a bow around that. Let's talk a little bit about the fallout around the rest of the defense. I mean, I think, you know, the initial reaction is, okay, well, I guess this puts Brandon Wilson on the team. He's a special teams guy you like. If you're worried, if you're wondering about what that gunner situation is going to do, I guess, if we have to be, because that plays into the Auden Tate. Right? Auden Tate needs to be a special teams contributor if he's going to make this team, right? Well, if you have Brandon Wilson and Clayton Fedulum up on game day.
Yeah.
Those guys are special teams guys, and Brandon Wilson clearly could play gunner. I mean, he's runs a 4-3,
and he can
return kicks
so
and all that type
of
stuff.
On Tate could be an inactive part of Duke's inactive seven.
Oh, right, absolutely. So you're not losing. So when you're looking at that 46 and 53 picture, you can see where that could play in, and you know, Trayvon Henderson has people excited. Josh Shaw can do multiple things. So I'm curious to see how that. Maybe, I guess, out of those three, this plays out. I mean, is it going to be 5-5? Is it going to be 6-4? 6-4 safeties is usually, but with Josh being the swing guy,
right.
You sort of get it. You get a half of each.
Yeah, and Terrell Austin is not really buying Brandon Wilson playing any kind of corner.
No.
And so that's not a question. He's clearly a safety for Terrell Austin. I think the other thing, Paul, with this too is that came up in the big picture scheme of the defense. It's like, well, does this put Michael Johnson on notice?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been cutting Michael for a few years now. But I think the Andrew Brown apparently massive hamstring injury.
Yeah.
That dude hasn't practiced.
No.
He hasn't played. So to me, I mean, if he's either a candidate for IR. At this point, I don't know. And if he suddenly appears in practice and plays in the fourth preseason game, I went from carrying 10 D linemen to now carrying 9. And I think Michael's part of that. And I think that opens up a room for an on Tate or some weird stuff on the back end with your, because the back of the corner room's horrific still. So. What are the safety, you know? So
I mean, you're looking at...
I think it's 90 linemen now, and Michael's part of that. So I think that's where the other bodies come in.
It's such a weird thing because Jordan Willis and Sam Hubbard just went off in Dallas. Yes. And those are two guys... You know, it's easy to see the 8, in my opinion. Right? It's Jordan Willis, Andrew Billings, who... was a monster in Dallas.
Yeah,
as Andrews. Good of a game as
we've
I've
been
seen,
saying it all camp,
and it showed in that game. And as good of a like disruptive game from a defensive tackle in that position next to Geno that I've seen here. I mean, Domitad didn't do that type of stuff.
No,
not breaking through and standing in the backfield as soon as guys get it. Now who knows? I mean, Travis Frederick was not playing.
And Andrew Billings made sure to remind me that was the case.
Yeah, that wasn't Travis Frederick, but still, that was more the same of what we've seen from him. So, Willis, Billings, Geno, Carlos, backups are nickel. You're looking at guys like Sam Hubbard, Carl Lawson, Chris Baker, and Ryan Glasgow. That is a great 8.
Yeah.
Now. Who do you take snaps away from if you are playing number 90? Are you putting him in place of Jordan Willis, I assume?
Yeah, because he's going to start, as we always talk about.
Somehow.
So he's going to start.
Jordan Willis, who continues to just destroy every human in front of him.
Yeah, he did. He made.
I mean, he was unbelievable. He had 2 tackles for loss, 2 QB hits, and 2 sacks in 38 snaps. Now, granted, he played a lot of those in the back half of the game,
which is what you want. Yeah, you
he should
see
destroy
him do
those guys,
right?
But I don't know that Michael would have had that kind of production if he was playing against those guys. And look,
the only thing I could think of there, Paul, is if they still like remember Marvin. So in the amazing press conference where he basically telegraphed George getting cut with Jesse Bates, he'll be sooner than later.
Real quick.
Also in that press conference, he said, "We're probably going to use Carl the same way." Now, Carl's out there saying he thinks it's great. He's playing three downs. He's setting the edges. But if, I mean, I guess Marvin said a thing that was true. So if they still think Carl shouldn't play run downs, so, and he's just an edge rusher, which that's fine. He can still get 12 sacks. And so now it's Sam Hubbard as a rookie. It's a long year. Dude's never played. This is how they think. If they're going to play 20 games, preseason, regular season, they're going to play another three. Can that kid do it? That's rare. That's hard, right? Because they're thinking, can a rookie play? And he just got done playing for Ohio State in January, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm going to play Marvin's devil's advocate with Michael. That here's a dude who can give us those snaps, and it's another body in the inside outside rotation, and maybe we reduce those snaps as the years go on.
Well, here's my thing. I don't have a problem with keeping Mike on the team. I think they need leadership. I think they've jettisoned.
I mean, clearly, yeah, they've lost a lot of that.
Brandon LaFell, who whatever he was good for the people in that room as far as a person goes. George, they're now very young back there. They lost. Mike is that for that I have no problem with that, but you better cut his snaps back, and he better be there.
Gotta be the.
He better be there. I mean, the way that they've run it out during the ones, he's starting on the edge and moving inside in the nickel.
Yeah,
that doesn't make any sense when you have all those guys. Look, if Sam Hubbard can't do it because he's hurt and banged up, and Jordan Willis gets hurt or Carl Lawson gets hurt, fine. Then you're playing Michael Johnson more. But you can't be doing that now. You have too many young guys who do have the bend and the pass rush and can set the edge that you don't need. And you should be trying to save him if you're keeping him on the roster.
Michael would be older. Yeah, Michael would be better playing fewer snaps, too.
You're going to talk about Carl Lawson. You get more with less.
Yeah, Michael for sure.
Michael for sure, you would get more with less. He showed he can help you as your nickel pass rush inside guy. I got no problem with that. You know, Hubbard and Willis have not done that as much. But you can't have him out there doing both. You can't have a 30 plus year old Michael Johnson out there playing at that rate. He'd be playing like 80% of the snaps,
which he's done the last couple of years,
and that's ridiculous.
No, I mean, I definitely agree with that.
There's too many other young guys that you can put into sub-packages that you should be running that guy out there in multiple packages like that.
Yeah, if you're going to – that's the thing, I guess. And maybe now because they have cut LaFell and they have cut George Iloka, maybe it's new Marv. Hey,
new
same,
Marv.
Same but different.
Same but different.
Same but different. So maybe week one, you know, it's more of the Jeremy Hill thing. You get the start. You play the first series or two, but then we don't really see you after, which actually, as opposed to the running back, which to me, that really screwed up their offense, I don't really think it's going to affect the defense in such a negative way if that's indeed how it goes. If Michael plays 15 snaps, they just happen to be the start of the game and the start of the half.
I don't have a problem with Michael playing 15 snaps.
Right. So that'll be same but different. That'll be curious. Different but same.
Yeah.
Right? That'll be, I guess, to be determined if he's still on the team. I mean, I guess they've got 2 weeks to figure that out.
We've got 2 weeks to figure that out, and injuries can happen between now and then. Right. And, you know, I'm just saying, I don't care if you want to keep it around. You want to keep him in place. That's fine. I probably wouldn't, but that's fine. I completely get that. But you cannot have him in the same role that he's been in when you have this many guys who are showing this much potential that are young and are ready to develop. And if you're going to have that attitude with Jesse Bates, why would you not have that attitude with Jordan Willis and Sam Hubbard?
Right, who have shown way more.
And obviously Carl Lawson.
Right.
You know, that's my opinion. Who are who are their job is the exact same as number 90.
Again, fire all cannons, so let me just slip this in here. If you're going to go with 8 and Billings is doing what Billings is doing and you're moving these guys inside, is Chris Baker the one that's... There's no loyalty there.
There is no loyalty
there. It's a nice deal on paper, but there's no guarantee. I mean, it's a 1 year, $3 million, but there's like, they could whack him now, and it's, that doesn't really do much for them. So I'll just throw that out there, I guess, is like,
Billings is a big boy. Now, but if he's only playing on rundowns, but still.
So what's Chris Baker?
He's his backup. There's a spell in there somewhere.
Because Glasgow is basically Geno's backup. Glasgow plays the 35%.
Could maybe see him being inactive on game day.
Yeah.
You know, Baker's down. Maybe he's not part of the...
I'm just curious because it's like they're moving. The only reason I bring that up is because we have seen so much of Hubbard and Willis inside now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's interesting to me.
I think you want to have... It's a one-year deal. I think you want to have a guy like Baker in-house. I don't know that you can guarantee that Andrew Billings is going to make through a whole year healthy, and then you won't need that guy.
That is true, because there's no other first round...
There's no big... boy to go in there, and we have heard multiple times how important having that is for them.
You know, maybe the Tupo thing was what keeps Baker on, because they love that dude, and he hurt himself, and he might be a candidate for IR as well. He's walking around, but he's still in a brace. So
it's the defense as a whole gets very, very interesting. So those decisions will come up. Of course, the team plays in Buffalo. That will be on Sunday at 4 o'clock. It'll be the last chance to really see all these guys, and we'll see what comes of that. And then you're basically into let the Scrubs play for a game in Indy, and final cuts are here. So, the season, I use the old Apollo 13 line, and the moon is getting bigger in the window, or the earth is getting bigger in the window. Damn, I screwed it up. It's the earth, not the moon! I got to go back and watch it again. But anyway, it's all right. Before we go any farther, though, it is Pro Football Focus time. Of course, we're doing this every week now where we chat our buddy from PFF, Austin Gale, up to give you all the deep analytics of the week. Here is Austin Gale on Pro Football Focus.
All right, it is that time again to chat with our good friends over and over the Rhine and across in every single NFL head coaching room and front office, and that is Pro Football Focus. We have our boy Austin Gale is with us. Austin, good to have you, man.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to get into this.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot to break down, so let's jump right into it. Obviously the big news of the weekend was the Bengals letting go of George Iloka and moving on with second-round pick Jesse Bates. I want to dive into your analytics on that situation real quick, and let's talk about George Iloka. There's a lot of conversation about, well, who was he as a player, and why were they willing to move on from him? What do your numbers say about how George has played over the arc of his career and even just recently?
Yeah, George Iloka, over his career has been very consistent, very durable. He's put in average to above average grades. And a lot of his seasons, actually last year, he earned a 71.4 defense grade, the highest of his career. He had 61 solo tackles, three pass breakups, one interception. But he did, he missed a lot of tackles. He missed 11 tackles last season. That was a lot. He doesn't affect the pass game as much as you'd like. And, this is a guy that, like I said, average to above average, but as he gets older and you kind of see who he is, he's always going to kind of be that guy. He ranks 43rd among safeties with the highest career grade of his career. And you look at that, you look at Jesse Bates, the investment you have with Jesse Bates, the money you're putting in Iloka to keep him, it all kind of makes sense. It's a bittersweet moment just because of how much Iloka has a positively affected this franchise, but at a certain point you have to cut the ties, and with Bates playing well, I think now is the time.
Yeah, that's interesting numbers on him. And I guess along those same lines, what numbers have popped out to you in the preseason regarding Bates? I mean, his sample size is not huge, but they've been trying to get him a lot of snaps to get him into the mix. How has he looked in his two games?
Yeah, Baker's looked great. You know, coming out, you know, he has an 80.3 defense grade through two preseason games. That's the third highest among all safeties with at least 25 defensive snaps in the preseason. That's a great start. You always like to see up there in the 80s, top five ranked. Looks good in coverage. I think this is a guy that could play for a while for them. You look specifically at this last game in Dallas, you know, he earns an 83.1 defense grade, one target, one reception for 5 yards. This guy, I think, you know, what they think he's going to be is going to, you know, is what he's showing to be. You know, he missed a lot of tackles at Wake Forest, but he's cutting that down. He's not so much of a liability in the run game. I think they've coached him up well, and you know, probably through training camp and now through preseason games, I think now they think this is the time to move on from Aloka and kind of, you know, go all in on Jesse Bates.
Well, Saturday was not the greatest of games, particularly in the first half and particularly on the offensive line. What did you see? What did the numbers bear out when it came to what really happened on the offensive line? And you know, cast out the sinners, right? Who's to blame? What did you see with the offensive line play on Saturday?
Yeah, so you have T.J. Johnson. He only played 9 snaps, but he earns a 44.7 offense grade at center there. That's not something you want to see. But, I mean, instead of, you know, looking at the lows, there's definitely some room for improvement. But I think an important thing to highlight is Cordy Glenn has not allowed a single pressure in 2 preseason games. That's great. Jake Fisher had a great bounce-back game. He earns an 82.9 offense grade, which is, you know, way better than what we've seen in the past, and also the highest offense grade of any Bengals player on Saturday. Allowed 0 pressures across 19 pass block snaps. That's outstanding. Jake Fisher is going to have to put together multiple games like that if he is going to try and get a start at that right tackle spot. But I think, you know, we want to focus on the negatives sometimes just because it was a hard game to watch. But you look at some of the players that, you know, from a player evaluation standpoint, Jake Fisher stood out. Cordy Glenn continues to play well. Even Billy Price looks great in pass protection so far. The run blocking is where it's really struggling. You know, he needs to really figure it out in the run blocking just from a technique standpoint and overall just understanding the speed of the game. Adjusting to the speed of the NFL is so difficult when you're run blocking. Pass blocking too, but at center you have so much protection. You're in a phone booth times two. Going to run blocking, you're going against bigger, faster defensive linemen than you've ever gone against. Even playing at Ohio State, these guys are a whole nother level. And I think he's going to need more experience, you know, recovering from injury to bounce, you know, get in the right direction in terms of run blocking. From a pass protection standpoint, however, he's one of the best centers in the game right now in terms of the preseason.
Yeah, so the numbers say he has not given up pressure, right, in pass blocking yet?
That's correct. So, Billy Price hasn't given up a pressure. Neither has James Daniels, the other rookie center that a lot of people like. Frank Ragno is playing well, even though he's playing at guard. I think there's, you know, like I said, you focus on the pass protection, 29 pass block snaps in 2 preseason games, hasn't allowed a pressure, but you look to that run blocking, and that's where you really want to see him improve, because more importantly than probably any other position by than running back, a center has to be a good run blocker. You know, it's more important for tackles to be good in pass protection, even guards. But that center position often dictates a lot of inside runs. You look at some of the best centers in the game, Jason Kelce. He's probably one of the worst pass blocking centers in the NFL. But because he's such a good run blocker, he's so highly regarded because that's where you can really make an impact as a center. Not so much as in pass protection, but as a run blocker.
There were some standouts in the numbers along the defensive line, right? I mean, we documented it in a story that's up on the website right now about the young defenders really rising up and changing things, particularly in their front seven. What were some of the numbers you saw along the Bengals' defensive front, particularly with some of their younger players?
Yeah, you look at Sam Hubbard, he walks out of Dallas with a 92.5 defense grade, the highest on the team, and that's across 36 total snaps. That's a decent sample size for a preseason game. You have to like that. He has five total pressures, 4 hurries, 1 sack, you know, made 1 run defense, you know, 1 stop and run defense. You have to like that. I mean, even in his first game, even though, you know, there were some times where he looked like the game was a little bit faster than him, he played all right, and I think through 2 preseason games, Cincinnati has to be happy with Hubbard. And then looking at on that defensive line as well, Jordan Willis had a good game, 86.2 defense grade with 5 total pressures. Ryan Glasgow even had a great game. He had 6 total pressures. This is defensive line that was taking advantage of the Cowboys' backups for sure. And it's a positive thing. You know, you have to beat the backups before you can beat the starters. So have Glasgow and Willis and Hubbard excelling in that regard, even though I know it's not against first-string guys. I know it's not against Tyron Smith and some of the better ones. But it's still exciting to see just because you need to start out hot if you're going to really carry it into the regular season.
Absolutely. I got to tell you, I've been diving through the quarterback guide recently as I kind of go through all of the stuff you guys have to offer over at PFF. And honestly, I was – there were some really, really interesting numbers in there regarding Andy Dalton when you look at overall total accuracy. That's something that you don't normally hear a lot of people talk about, but it's more than just completion percentage. It's ball placement and completion percentage. It goes so deep. And I got to say, that's the type of stuff you can get with PFF. I know I'm really enjoying it. So tell people if they want it, if they want to know anything there is to know about what's going on with their teams, what's available, what can they do?
Yeah, the quarterback annual is one of the greater things we've created. It was actually just the first quarterback annual we've done at PFF this past season, and it's had rave reviews. It's so deep. It goes, these new quarterback metrics that we're able to pull out in terms of advanced accuracy stuff is stuff that NFL teams are chomping at the bit for. We got calls when we released that guide for us to do it on a bunch of college quarterbacks on an exclusive basis. People want that information very badly, both at the NFL level, college level, and, of course, the consumer level. That's available to all of our Edge subscribers. And then for Elite subscribers, that's where you're going to get into pressures allowed, and, you know, sacks allowed, pressures, total pressures, and all that kind of stuff where you're getting those advanced statistics. And to be an Edge subscriber, be an Elite subscriber, go to footballfocus.com and sign up.
That sounds great, Austin. Appreciate you joining us. We will talk to you again next week. Have a good one.
You too. Before we move on to let Jim offer his season predictions, I want to remind everybody that they have delicious beer at 50 West, and you should be drinking it. That's really all I should have to say at this point. I mean, at this point, if you don't know, if you haven't had it, I blame you.
Yeah, I have a nice six-pack to bring home with me.
Yeah.
Courtesy of Mike Nair, just he knew where to go.
He did
our
know where
Emmy
to go.
Nominated, although we was robbed.
We was I mean,
the Acquire won a
it
bunch
was
of Emmys.
Honor.
It was an
honor to be nominated,
yeah,
Jim.
It's always an honor to be nominated when you don't bring it home.
Yeah.
So, but no, congrats to the rest of the newsroom who did win Emmys. Mike deserves it. And but yeah, he was like, I mean, it's like there's no better way.
Better way
than to get a 50 West punch in the IPA.
So we both got six packs.
Great.
So I have that currently. I left it in the office fridge.
And it's gone now.
Well, right. I was like, I'm really taking my chances, but he gave it to me as I was about to go to the airport.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think I can A, drink all six of these and be allowed on the plane.
And carry on, Paul. Carry on.
I know. Well, then they go from cold to warm, and I didn't want to ruin their delicious taste.
Right.
Because that would be on me, not on them. So I put them in. I was like, my only hope is that they can sit in this office fridge through a weekend. By the way, the first weekend of high school football, which means a bunch of people are like dealing with high school football on a Friday night in there late. Although not that late, because our deadline is probably like 7 o'clock, right? but anyway, it's in there, and I'm happy to say that I believe they survived. I'm going to go pick those up and try to take them home. But you should be drinking those, or you should just go right down to the taps or to the, go down to the production works. They got all kinds of new stuff they have down there. They're making new stuff all the time. So go check that out. It's the best. All right, season prediction time, Jim. I will save mine for the time I normally would have done them. But we will let you fire all cannons and let it out what you see from this team this year. You get asked this probably on the vast majority of radio hits that you do from like mid-June until like the day before the day of the season probably. So I'll ask you, knowing that I'm actually going to get an answer, what will this team's record be in 2018?
10-6.
10-6. Optimistic view.
10-6.
Optimistic Jimmy.
I went through, I knew I was going to get asked this. I went through the schedule again.
Yeah.
Today, as this recording, I could not get to 11 wins just yet. Things have yet to occur, I'm sure. But 10-6, playoff team.
You think they make the playoffs
at
10-6?
Yes, they make the playoffs at 10. They might win the division at 10-6.
Yeah, they might. I would say if they get 10 wins, they're probably, it's a matter of if one of those was against Pittsburgh or not.
Right. So I do. I have them splitting against Pittsburgh.
So they win the home game. Win the road game because they never beat them.
Yeah, I have them winning a game. See, what's interesting, Paul, is the home game is earlier in the year. The road game is late.
Mm-hmm.
So I had them winning the home game when I ran through the schedule.
You're like, that would be a real shocker.
Well, I mean, it's going to be like a road game. It's going to be full of Steelers fans.
It will be all Steelers fans. That'll make them feel more comfortable. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So, So, 10-6.
Interesting. Why did you push him up? Why did you push him up?
There's a few things. One, and we've talked about this on this BBP, it all starts with the quarterback. And Andy has had the best camp I've seen since 2015. Mm-hmm. I believe that will translate into regular season play. I bought into Bill Lazor. I mean, I haven't seen his whole complement of offense, but I thought what he did in his final 14 games last year with what he had. Yes, I know the numbers. They still won 7 games with that train wreck.
Yeah.
I understand there's issues on the offensive line, but it's, again, as I said, it was so bad, Paul.
Yeah.
It was so bad. It was horrific.
They at least now have a left tackle.
Yes. And they have a center.
And
I think whatever's going to happen, however that shakes out on the right side, it's not going to be as bad as it was the last 2 years. Hashtag invested said. It's not going to be said. I understand. I think Bobby Hart's going to – I think Sed lost that job in Dallas.
Unbelievably that the guy in front of you can play like complete trash, and that's the night you lose the job.
So I think that'll get – whatever that is, it's going to be at least a little better. I think Joe Mixon is a star on the make. I think the receiver – I think that all is going to be better. And so you go 7-7 with the worst offense in football and a quarterback who – had no belief in anybody. You know what I mean?
I'd feel you.
So, and I think this defense, slightly below average last year, I think it's going to be, if it's just average, and I think it'll be a little bit above, I think that's just a recipe for 10 wins.
They'll get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
I think it's a recipe for 10 wins. In this league, they'll get to the quarterback, and assuming William Jackson can get through healthy, they will have a top-end dude that it can cover. If you can get to the QB and you can cover... That's this league in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So I all right. And I feel your optimistic view.
And I'll hit a tweet because this is related.
All right.
So the first tweet I got.
Yeah, we have three. I do three questions here. So yeah. Who's your first tweet from?
So this is from Kyle Rockhold at K Rockhold.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked, buy, sell, Marvin wins a playoff game in the next 2 years.
Oh, you're not going to do it.
And I picked it.
You're not going to do it.
And I picked this just for you.
You're not going to do this. Question.
I am going
to
do it.
I don't hate this question. I have this. I've had the same answer to this question since I've gotten the beat.
Right.
For the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Go ahead. And, I cannot believe you're about to say this.
I'm going in.
You're going in.
Playoff victory.
This year or next year?
No, this year.
This year?
Yeah.
10-6 and a playoff.
I don't know how I feel about it. I have a hard time going 2 years out.
Wow.
Homer. Hashtag Homer.
Hashtag wow.
Yeah. No, I do. There's a lot of reasons for that. So 10-6 might win you the division. That means you get a home game, and I get it. I get it. Everybody.
Oh my God.
You just
want this to have been on the record because no one else will predict this.
I do.
Because here's the thing. If it doesn't happen, no one will care that you said it.
Right.
If it does happen, you will tweet out.
Go back.
You'll be like, give me the sound. I'm playing it. I'm putting it on Twitter. I'm going to create a watch it video. We're going to post it up on the Milwaukee website.
Hashtag HTJ. Hot take Jim.
Hot take Jim, indeed.
So basically what I'm saying is I'm sort of all in on the coordinator on offense. I'm all in on Joe Mixon, these skill guys. Everyone knows how I feel about Andy. And the guy's been in the playoffs 5 times. And I look around the AFC, Paul, like I'm not a – this division's still trash. I mean, it's New England, and that is what it is over there. Everyone's loving the Chargers. Somebody's got to win that division. I look around, and I just see – I see a window into that.
Yeah.
We've talked about this for a long time. This conference isn't great. There's a reason New England goes to Super Bowl all the time.
Yeah.
And yes, it's because they're good and hoodie, but it's also because they got trash bags in the East
mm-hmm.
that they just kick over. And really, I mean, Pittsburgh has been a paper lion for a long time, and that's played out.
Yes.
They're Jeremy Hill fumble away from Mike Tomlin being
Marv.
Being Marv mm-hmm. since the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So Andy Reid, again, one and dones.
Yeah.
I mean, you look around, Philip Rivers, people love Philip Rivers. they're a home game and Paul Brown Stadium away from that dude not winning a playoff game since they went 14-2 and then lost at home.
That was
like 10 years ago.
Yeah, longer than that, I think.
Well, Marty Schottenheimer was still coaching.
Yeah.
So, like you look around this if you really, truly look at the conference, sure, there's excitement. Sure, there's young guys in the South, and there's your Jags.
That's so jaggy for you to bring
which is
that
already
up.
Like a train wreck.
Yeah.
Bortles. Guys getting suspended.
It's still Bortles.
It's still Bortles. Yeah, am I poking the bear a little bit with Bengals fans? Sure. But I'm not – I do cover this team, and I do think there is – I've said it, hammer the over. And I do think if they're 10-6, like I think they will be, that means healthy, all that stuff. I think that's there. I think it's there.
Yeah.
I think they can beat a wild card team at home.
Whew, boy. I don't even know what to say.
And then
right.
Marvel.
See, normally I'd be able to just clap back at you with like stuff that would be part of my. But I gotta save
yeah,
it.
Paul's gotta wait.
I've gotta save it. Yep. But I think the fact that I need to save it probably tells you what you.
Yeah.
Although we've both been saying hammer the over, so I'll give that away. I mean, yeah. I think we both feel like the over is there, and I will say because I don't need to wait to say this because I've said it a million yeah. times. I will not predict this team to win a playoff game until they do yeah. one. I just can't do it. No matter if they go 16-0 and they're playing a team that went 7-9 at home and that team's quarterback got hurt on the way to the stadium, I will not predict this team yeah. to win a playoff game because I've been wrong yeah. and I'm not going to be wrong anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bet against a trend like this
right.
until I see it. I see it, then I'll start picking yeah. them to do stuff. But you don't care.
No.
You just light the bridge on fire on the way out. That's it. Fire all cannons.
Yep.
You have nothing left. You have nothing left. Did you have any more Twitter questions that you needed to get to, or did you cover them all with one fell
no,
swoop?
No, real quick. So I won't.
We're supposed
to
do three. We've got to stick
yeah,
with our.
So I'll go real quick. So at Ohio isn't too bad. That's his handle. Favorite memory covering the team, and honestly, like. Football-wise, it is the 2015 season. It was my first year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how could that whole year from start to finish was, I mean, what, 8-0?
Yeah, wild.
Tez, Steelers, McCarron guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was everything, like,
it was insane.
It was a really incredible year.
And I don't know. I would argue, I know it is for me. I can't imagine. I don't know. I mean, that playoff game will go down as the most memorable game I've ever covered.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. I mean, I'm sure they can get crazier.
Right.
But it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
There were four rule changes because of that game.
I mean, yeah. So start to finish, from me walking in right before the 15 draft with the whole, wait, Whitworth's still here? Andre's still here? You're drafting these tackles? I mean, like.
Yeah.
Even hindsight of 4 years later. Just makes that year, and we've had. I mean, last year started off with the reporting Marv's gonna die, and then we thought. Then it ends with Marv's quitting. I mean, so there's yeah. a lot of football memories, but like 15 April to January to MF and Jerry Porter.
Yeah,
I mean, just incredible.
Yeah, just really insane. No
so
doubt.
This one, I'm curious your thoughts on this.
Yeah,
from Tom Gary. At TMGEARY time. Favorite BBP moment. Hashtag BBP Ooh. Moment. So I had to think about this. And there's a lot. We've done so many of these. So we script, to Paul's credit, he drives his ship. He writes his notepad on what we're going to talk about. I invariably destroy that script. And that is my
almost as if it's your goal.
Right. That is my favorite memory because you usually never really knew what was going to come out of my mouth. I have two. One, so to that effect, was my Stevie Truther.
Stevie Truther.
That floored you.
It really
at
did.
The end of, I dropped it in there at the end of one BBP, and you're, yeah. and it blew your mind. We had to come back to
we
it.
We had to come back.
That Stevie Wonder could see, and I believe this. But, and then sort of on that moment when you killed Carl Weathers.
Oh, yeah.
And then we tweeted at Carl Weathers.
And then Carl Weathers was like.
He was like, be peace.
Yeah,
BP. Hashtag BPs.
Hashtag BPs.
He responded to us, and then he said, screw you, I'm not coming on your show.
Nope. He was the NFL offered him up because he was going to host some NFL
yes.
honors thing, and he was on
Super
the PR
Bowl
list.
Philly.
And so we're like, perfect. Let's get Carl Weathers on. Let's tell him that I killed him.
Yeah.
And he's like, nah, dog.
Yeah, he's like, nah. I ain't doing that. So when you killed Carl Weathers and we had that whole thing with the Rockies and power ranking the Rockies, we didn't even really power rank. That's like, I think it planted the seeds for that a little bit because when we went through our favorite Rockies. So to me, and generally speaking, my favorite memories of this podcast are sort of the unscripted times where I just made you lose your stuff.
Yeah.
Stevie can see. And then you killing Carl Weathers and like what happened after that, I think.
Look.
Was,
I didn't know he was not only alive, but alive and doing really well, actually. Like, having a
he
nice
was in
little...
a show, like a highly rated show at the time.
I think he still is. Yeah. Yeah, that's totally on me.
Yeah.
And, you know, he is alive.
He is alive.
He is alive he's alive and doesn't want to talk to us. And who can blame him?
Right.
And who can blame him? Those are pretty... You're gonna have a hard. Yeah, I'd have a hard time coming up off the top of my head with anything that tops that. That's pretty hilarious. Although, I mean, really, just I wish I could have put together a collection of all the things that made you the most mad. Because, like, we came up with this idea as our gimmick to end every show 2 years ago.
Yeah,
just because you always were so mad about stuff.
Something
had you livid, and it almost always had to do with some form of traffic or driving or etiquette in that. And I was like, you know, I have to give you an opportunity every week so that people understand that this is not some fake show stuff.
No.
Like, this is stuff that you literally, like, it just everything irritates you.
Yeah.
And you
you found it hilarious because it was so
absurd.
I find
it funny because it does. It's just these things make you so mad. And I just wanted to give you a platform to put it out there. And it's a way that you can bond with a lot of people that listen and that are also mad about stuff.
Right.
And so I guess for one last time, I'd like to ask you what you're mad about today.
You know, honestly.
how can you be mad today?
Well, there's two things.
Oh, moving. You've got moving in front of you.
This could be a personal issue. But I think people will appreciate this. All right. And this usually does not happen in your own home. So it's public, having to take care of things publicly. Like, I don't understand. The toilet paper that doesn't unroll when you need it to, you just like the two squares are popping off at a
especially
time.
That really thin stuff that's in public restrooms.
Like, it's already a process in there. And you don't really need to be working that hard to finish the process.
No. Because next thing you know, you've got your hand all the way up in there, and you're trying to get it to roll right.
You
or
really
like
don't
want to
be touching stuff in those things.
No.
So that's, and then also, finally, people who inconvenience me make me mad. And this is what I mean by this, Paul. So like, it's like 11 o'clock. I'm ready to move my car off the street, pull it into the garage. Right, I turn the car on. It's 11. Now here comes a car down the street. I gotta wait to pull out into the like that. The person who flips light turns green, right? And you're going. Car in front of you. I'm going to turn on a blinker.
Yeah.
Make a right turn. Slow everything down. I could have got around you before if it was on.
Blinker usage is big.
You know, like the and then, you know, this one, this just happened. You get the two cars in front of you, right? Car number one, I'm going to turn left.
Yeah.
Okay? You're like, all right, I'm going to go around you. No. Car next to him, gonna turn right. The other guy can't. Is he turning left? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
So now we're all stuck. And then you see the little walk sign.
Yeah.
Counting down 10, 9, 8. I got these two jags in front of me. They can't turn.
They can't turn. It's counting you down.
So people who inconvenience me make me mad.
Yeah, understandable. Understandable.
You're just trying to get places, Paul.
Yeah.
Pedestrians, cyclists.
Dudes.
Cones.
Dude, I'd like to actually go back and try if I could go back and find it. The day that we talked, cones, yeah. But the day that we talked about people walking slow across crosswalks, it was an explosion of like 10 minutes on this thing where it was, I mean, there's lots of angles to that story. But the bottom line is, like, give me some pace.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are or where you are. Like, just show a little bit of pace and understanding. But I might have to go trot. That was a classic if we're really talking
about it. Why are you happy, Paul?
I am happy that we had four?
Yeah, this is 4 years.
Four great years. It's really weird. We get a lot of different people that we meet and get to work with in these jobs.
Yeah.
It's really what the job is just getting to know people and meeting people and talking to them. And you, these things cycle through, like reporters. It's crazy. I came in, the first time working full time in some capacity on the beat back in 2013. I worked with Joe Reedy, and then I worked with Skinny for a year, and then you came in, and now we've had a long run together. You work with different people. Now, the newsroom around is like a completely different place. I'm like somehow one of the oldest people in the newsroom. So it's unpredictable and it's wild. So all you can do is just like enjoy the time that you have. And I just feel really lucky to have gotten the opportunity for us to work together, because and like you're a great writer and you're an incredible journalist and reporter, and you, it mattered to you, like, and you're great at it. And we had a really good professional camaraderie, and we were really like a really good 1-2 combo where I felt like where you want, we just had a great 1-2.
Yeah.
And, sure. and that's great. And that is fantastic, right? Like, that's what you want. Hey, this makes us, we're able to do a really good job in the gig. To me though, it's not often that you meet somebody that on top of all that you really become really good friends with. And the way we do the job and the way we do it, where we're out there and we're like we're doing an hour every week on here. Oh wait, hold on, no, the deuce, the walkout. We're doing a lot of time where we're just talking together. We're doing videos together. We're doing like Instagram lives and Facebook lives. You can't hide that. Like you can't fake that in the way that you do it. And I, somebody sent me a tweet of a screenshot of us, which is funny because there's a lot of bad screenshots out there of me. Really, really bad screenshots of me looking like I have some sort of intestinal issue or maybe some sort of like mental issue or something. But this one actually, it was, and he said, this to me is the perfect photo of how I envision of your guys' friendship. And I was so honored by that because it was a great thing of us laughing in a thumbnail about whatever the heck we were doing after this game, but that our readers see that.
Yeah.
And because I, like I said, you can't fake a real genuine friendship, and we have that. And it was, it's been so much fun working with you. We will see each other throughout the off season. I'm positive you'll be back on the BBP at some point because I got a lot of off-season BBPs to fill in Atlanta.
Super Bowl week.
Super Bowl week will just be me and you talking through the game every single day, I guess, as we try to work. I'm positive that that's not an issue. I plan on being up to Milwaukee.
You're coming down.
Yeah, yes. And I know that's gonna. But the everydayness of it is a really special thing, and you don't always get that in this business. So I'm very, very much appreciative of everything that it was over the last 4 years. So thank you so much for all your time and hard work and all the stories you did when I was staring at my daughter and I was like, I don't think I can do it right now. all that stuff goes a long way. So Jim, is why I'm very, very happy today for you and for Michelle, and that the Inquirer got to we all got to have that for the time that we did. So thank you very much for everything.
Very well said. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. That'll do it. We will wrap it up for the official farewell podcast. Jim, it's been a pleasure. And don't worry. The BBP is
still going on. Going strong.
I've got plans. I'm not going to let it just fall apart. We kind of person you think I am. BBPs will continue going in exactly the same manner that they have. I might have a few different voices as we hire, which, by the way, if you know somebody who you think would do this job and their resume doesn't just include loves the Bengals on Twitter, you can always have them apply and shoot me an email. But we are in the process of filling the job. That will happen soon. In the meantime, I'll be filling the BBP with lots of creativity. So enjoy that, and that'll be back next week. Of course, you will have the Walkout podcast in from Buffalo, and that will be posting Monday morning from Sunday night overnight, so keep an eye out for that. Otherwise, have a good one, everybody.
Hey.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh. yeah.
Hear me.
Oh, come on. Oh, come on. Come on. That's just the way it is.
That's the way it is.
Things will never be the same.
Never be the same. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's just the way it is. Oh, yeah.
We gotta make a change. It's time for us as a people to start making some changes. Let's change the way we eat, let's change the way we live, and let's change the way we treat each other. You see, the old way wasn't working, so it's on us to do what we gotta do to survive. And still I see no changes. Can a brother get a little peace? It's war on the streets and a war in the Middle East. Instead of war on poverty, they got a war on drugs so the police can bother me. And I ain't never did a crime I ain't have to do. But now I'm back with the facts, giving it back to you. Don't let them jack you up, back you up, crack you up, and pimps back you up. You gotta learn to hold your own. They get jealous when they see you with your mobile phone. But tell the cops I can't touch this. I don't trust this. When they try to rush, I bust this. That's the sound number two. You say it ain't cool. But it raised no fool. And as long as I stay black, I got a stage strap. And I never get to lay back, cause I always gotta worry about the payback. Some buck that I roughed up way back, coming back after all these years. Right, tat, 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 tat.
That's the way it is.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah. That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah.
Some things will never change.